Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room. We'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. If you listen to the show on Friday, then I guess you already know our thoughts and things about the untimely and shocking death of Bray Wyatt, Wyndham Rotunda, and of course the tragic death of legendary Terry Funk. But we knew that SmackDown was going to change some of their schedule around, and they were going to pay tribute during the two-hour show to both Terry Funk and to Bray Wyatt, and indeed they did. The show started with virtually everyone on stage. Now, I got some people who wrote me and said, where was Seth Rollins? Where was Roman Reigns? Well, Seth Rollins had actually shot a video earlier, and he had said that his first instinct was to fly out to SmackDown to be there, but it would have been hard for him to get the flight. It would have taken, you know, precious time away from his family. And he said, I remembered what Bray Wyatt, last time we talked on the phone anyway, I remember what Bray Wyatt told me. And he said the important thing, as they exchanged goodbyes, he said, you go hug your daughter. And he said, that's what I think I'm going to do instead of coming to SmackDown. I think I'm going to take his advice, and I think I'm going to go hug my daughter. So that's understandable. Roman Reigns, you know, the bottom line is this, folks. There's probably going to be more of a tribute on Monday. We'll see what ends up happening. I don't think necessarily everyone had to be on that stage to pay their respects. I do think it was surprising to see Eric Rowan, and I think we kind of know now where this was going to go. I mean, they haven't released anything saying that's where it was going to go, but I find it very hard to believe, unless they just did it because he was such close friends with Bray Wyatt, I find it very hard to believe that they just let him on that stage front and center. The benefit of perhaps he's under contract or was about to sign a contract or something. Braun Strowman showed up, obviously still not ready to wrestle, but he wanted to be there, which is understandable. We'll talk a little bit more about the show and about the tributes they paid throughout it, but the opening is what I want to stick to begin with. And yes, there were some people notably absent, but I mean, at the end of the day, everyone's not going to be there logistically. It's very hard. No one realized this was going to happen. This ends up happening, what, Thursday? And SmackDown is Friday. So there are some logistics involved as well. So don't jump to any conclusions. But, Mike, it was a little bit surprising to see Eric Rowan there. And it makes me wonder if that is a little bit of a peek into what the future would have been had Bray Wyatt not untimely passed away.
Right, and that's the thing. And I'm surprised. I guess Bo Dallas couldn't have been there, but because he's, you know, family and all that stuff. But I wouldn't have been surprised if Bo was there, would have been there as well. But that's neither here nor there. And I did like what they did, you know. And, you know, I tell you what, if he's not signed, he's close. Because if Eric Rowan's not signed, then he's close, because they wouldn't have let him on the stage if he wasn't, right?
You wouldn't think so. I mean, maybe they would, but listen, here's the thing. He was front and center. They might have let him on, but they might have said, well, you're not really signed, so stand over in the corner. We won't really get you on the air. No, they got him. So, to me, that kind of feels as though perhaps we know where the future would have been for Bray Wyatt and company should this not have happened, Tom. Hello, Tom.
Hello, I'm here. I'm
nobody
sorry.
There. Okay.
I'm right here. There you are. So I wasn't actually surprised to see him because not too much because I heard rumblings that he was on his way back. He was a free agent, and I heard some rumblings that he was going to be signed. They were going to do something upon Bray's return. I was surprised to see him front and center. WWE kind of like maybe have him in the like in the background or miss him, but I think that it would be. I think something is going. They're going to announce, maybe not announce it on TV, but I think that we're going to find out where the story was going eventually, and we might see Roman in some kind of other role with Braun Strowman when he comes back as well.
Maybe, you know, I got to tell you, this whole entire thing, the whole entire Bray Wyatt deal gets a little spooky. I'm not somebody who is really easily led into superstition or anything like that, but, you know, I was thinking about it last night and I said, what a tremendously bizarre amount of coincidences and bad things have happened. If you remember right, Bray Wyatt was gone for a long time before this with some kind of an illness. And then when he was brought back, first, Alexa Bliss, obviously, was supposed to be a part of the crew. And then she got pregnant. So that was put on hold, and away she went. And then Eric Young was supposed to be a part of the group. And then Vince McMahon was reinstated, and Eric Young didn't want to work for Vince McMahon, so he left, and that put a hold on it. And then Barry Windham got sick, and Bray Wyatt took some time to go there and be with him, and then that took away from things. And it just seems like this is such a bad luck gimmick. Luke Harper died. It was just Braun Strowman injured, just one thing after the other that kept stalling and stalling and stalling the real momentum of the Bray Wyatt gimmick over and over and over again. And if you think about the amount of things that happened that stalled this gimmick, kind of spooky, Todd.
Absolutely right there. Like you said, this whole thing was like a mess right there when Bray died. And, you know, it's one thing, one bad thing from another, and it was just a train wreck.
Mike, doesn't it seem very unusual that so many bad things happened on the road to getting this character back in order?
Right, I mean, yeah, you might say, well, you know, in terms of Alexa Bliss getting pregnant and stuff, that's a good thing, and that's a positive thing, but in terms of the gimmick, no, it's a bad thing. And, of course, I don't know what went on between Eric Young and Vince McMahon to sour that relationship, or even if they – even had a good relationship at the time. So, you know, what went on that made him say, that made Eric Young say, I don't want to work with Vince McMahon, you know? Because before, I mean, when he was first signed, he was with Sanity. He was working fine with Vince McMahon then, I guess. So I mean, yeah, a lot of weird stuff around Bray Wyatt. Not just the gimmick itself. Just a lot of weird circumstances. Oh, and by the way, I was listening. I happened to listen to Jim Cornette commenting on the Bray Wyatt deal, and Jim Cornette goes, "Well, I don't get where they were going. I don't even get Bray Wyatt, what he was doing, and what he was originally doing." You know, and I'm sitting here listening to Jim Cornette say that, and I'm saying, Jim Cornette, can't you see Bray Wyatt was supposed to have been Charles Manson, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to believe that Jim Cornette did not know what was going on. It was very similar to what Kevin Sullivan did down in Florida wrestling, right? Only he just came out and said, well, I'm satanic, and that's it. Well, Bray Wyatt couldn't really do that, didn't want him to do that. Here's the thing, you know, on Friday, I gave my best take on my feelings about it. Everybody knows that Bray Wyatt was one of my favorite performers, because I loved his creativity. I loved the spooky gimmick. I loved his delivery. I loved the fact you could never really, figure out where things were going. He always threw some curveballs, little clues in there. He treated the fans intelligently. He didn't treat them like black-jawed troglodytes. And for that reason, I always really had a lot of respect for Bray Wyatt, and I was eagerly anticipating him coming back. But there was something that I wanted to say, and I couldn't get it out because I just didn't know what it was. I said, you know, I was angry about something, and I didn't know what I was angry about. And at first I said, well, it's a selfish anger. I'm not going to get to see him, and, you know, he's my favorite wrestler. But no, you know what? I thought about it over the weekend. And here's what I'm angry about. Bray Wyatt should have went down as one of the top superstars in the history of the WWE. And the reason he did not is because of the way they treated him. The way they screwed his gimmick up time after time after time after time and never got it right. And I just wish they had gotten it right. Because had they gotten it right in full force, there is no question in my mind that Bray Wyatt and his family would have went down in history as one of the top groups ever of all time. Leave it to the WWE to screw this man up. Not once, not twice, but three times. Leave it to the WWE to do that. And this time there's no correcting your mistake because it's too late. And I guess that's what I'm angry about. I'm angry because they couldn't get it right. I'm angry because a man who had the talent, the ability, the creativity, and the intelligence to be a top, top, top name in history of the WWE is never really going to get that chance. And there's always going to be some people who say, I didn't really like it. It didn't go well. And it was a little bit dumb. Yeah. Because of the WWE screwing the shit out of it. So that's why I'm angry. I'm angry because you had, no pun intended, you had the whole world in your hands and you blew it. You blew it not once, not twice, but three damn times you blew it. And now it's too late. And this guy, who will certainly be remembered by his fans as a top guy, isn't going to get the, I don't think he's going to get the full credit he deserves. If this guy were around in the era of Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock and The Undertaker and all these people, and they were cranking on all cylinders with this character, you could forget it. He'd be legendary. Legendary. And I guess the other thing that makes me angry is everyone now is throwing their roses and saying how wonderful he was. Well, when he was alive, half you people were saying, this is boring. He can't wrestle. I don't want to see this anymore. Stop being hypocrites. you didn't like him, you could just say, well, that's a terrible thing that he passed away. I'm very sorry for his family and, you know, his children and everything. You know, I wasn't a fan, but whatever. At least do that. Don't be a hypocrite now and tell me how wonderful he was when, you know, a month ago you're telling me how badly he sucked. Don't do that. Don't be that person. Thing about Jim Cornette is this. If it's not some guy hitting somebody with a tennis racket from behind, Jim Cornette does not understand it. The very fact that Jim Cornette does not understand it basically tells you all you need to know about Jim Cornette, and that is, cerebrally, he is not connected to professional wrestling. What is there not to understand? Here's what I don't understand. I don't understand how you can miss the obvious and destroy his character three separate times. Go through this, shall we? When Bray Wyatt and family showed up, he was a backwoods Louisiana bayou guy who obviously had gotten some cult together of backwoods hillbilly, crazed hillbillies, who listened to every word he said like he was God, and he had this weird, uncanny ability to talk in psychobabble and yet make people believe what he said. Like Charles Manson. And the gimmick always should have been, he's not supernatural, but he's extraordinarily psychological. And professional wrestlers who should know better fall for some of this because he's so gifted when it comes to talking that psychobabble that some people end up believing it. Some people fall into line like a real cult leader does. You ever wonder how a cult leader gets people? I mean, if you were to walk into some kind of a cult meeting and they said, you have to abandon your family, leave behind your friends, pledge yourself to us, you're going to go, I'm getting the hell out of here, right? But some people don't. The idea was to explore why those people don't. The idea was to say some of these people who are loners, some of these people who have weaker minds, some of these people who are a little bit on the fringe, they're going to believe Bray Wyatt. He's going to take them under his wing. He's going to corrupt them in a way that's going to make them extraordinarily dangerous people. And even if he doesn't take them into his family, the very fact that they listen to him, the very fact that he has some sort of a control over them, makes them extraordinarily dangerous. That's all he was. He was half madman, half genius. That's what he was. So that's what it is, Mr. Cornette. That's what it was. Then they tried to make him supernatural, and they blew his character. And when he came back, I believe, Bray Wyatt didn't tell me this personally, but I believe that the gimmick was that he had gone away to an insane asylum or someplace where they pumped his ass full of Prozac or whatever the hell it had to be, so he was happy all the time, and he didn't have the violent tendencies, and he smiled and was this happy children's talk show host that talked to puppets and laughed and said, oh boy, we're going to have a good time and nothing's going to be scary or violent. But when the situation arose, he harbored such intense hatred and violence in him that he repressed, that it manifested itself in the form of an alter ego called the Fiend, who was just hell-bent on violence and destruction and rage. Not supernatural, just the manifestation of all of the violence and rage he had suppressed with no outlet for. That's what it's supposed to be. So if Jim Cornette does not understand it, well, I don't understand how a tennis racket to the back of a head is supposed to knock out a professional wrestler when a pile driver does it. So let's talk about that, Mr. Cornette. Tom, I don't think it was that hard to understand Bray Wyatt's gimmick. It's just that the WWE kept destroying it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And Jim Cornette, to me, honestly, I mean, he's one of the greatest managers, you know, of the 70s and 80s. But if you don't understand what Bray Wyatt's character even was on its inception, or even where the character was going now, gee. dude, it ran parallel, the gimmick ran parallel to Waylon Mercy, Jake Roberts, Raven, Cactus Jack, all these, you know, guys that came before him. It pretty much, you know, all, a piece of that, every piece of those guys were in Bray Wyatt, but Bray Wyatt took it to another level. And I could assume if you're over the age of 13 or 14 years old, you know who Charles Manson was and what his, you know, what he was known for. So for Jim Cornette to be labeled one of the greatest minds in professional wrestling of all time, it just kind of stumps me that he didn't get where it was going. But, I mean, there was a time last year upon Bray Wyatt's return that we spent a good portion of the Sunday show talking about his return and the QR codes and the merchandise, and we, you know, all he did was return at Payback, and he didn't say a word. He did not say a word. He just
no. And here's the thing: if Jim Cornette's saying, "Well, I didn't know where the newest manifestation of Bray Wyatt was going," I didn't either. We never got the chance to. Jim, we never got the chance to. The story was 1/8 told. So, yeah, you don't know where something's going if you just read the first paragraph of the first chapter. There was much more to the story that was going to happen. If I had to guess, I would say that Bray Wyatt had come out of his shell. He no longer felt the need to be that cult leader. The rage was gone. The anger was gone. But there were constant reminders in his past that maybe cured isn't what he wanted to be. That they would not allow him. The demons of his past would not allow him to be normal, would not allow him to be Wyndham Rotunda, would not allow him to come out there and say, "Thank you all for saving my life. Thank you all for being there when I needed you." They didn't want him to be that guy. And they would continually hound him and haunt him and hound him and haunt him until finally he repressed himself back. And I think the story was going to go backwards, not forwards, in the sense that I think we were going to see the return of the cult leader. We were going to see the return of that guy who gave in to the temptation to go back to who he was after a while. I think you were going to see a series of repressions where you might see the Fiend, you might see the talk show host guy, you'd see the Fiend again, you'd see Bray Wyatt, you'd see them all in various forms for a month or two, but not the cult leader. And then finally, that's what you would see. And he would say all of these various personalities were just extensions of this, the man that I am right here. These were my alter egos all coming out. And his place was with his family. And I think that's where that was going. And we would have saw another Wyatt family, possibly the Wyatt Six. Like they said, I know that Alexa Bliss was supposed to be a part. Certainly, you know, her getting pregnant delayed that. I know there were some other people supposed to be a part, and then they vanished. So they had to scramble and try to get things together. But I do believe they were getting things together. But Mike, you know, it should be obvious that the WWE themselves are responsible for people who didn't get it, because we saw it and we understood where it was going. We just knew the WWE wasn't doing it very well.
Right. And that's basically, you know, he didn't come out and say it, but that's what I think he was getting at, that. And he basically said that, Cornette said that there are a lot of things in the WWE that I don't get nowadays. And basically, I think that's where he was going with that. And, you know, because he said he didn't get where they were going with him, but he also said that this guy could be, he's one of the greatest talkers. He was one of the greatest talkers ever. He was as good a talker as Mike Rotunda, his dad. He was as good a talker as even his granddad, Blackjack Mulligan, you know. So, you know, he could have been as big as those two guys, you know. He got that. I think he was talking about a lot of the stuff that went around, not just him, not just his gimmicks and such, but that's the deal. A lot of stuff that happens with the WWE, a lot of people don't get because they cut things off at the knees. They do all this stuff. They take you down blind alleys. It's like, okay, what you want us to get invested in these people, and you cut this gimmick, and something starts off good, starts to catch fire, and you cut it off at the knees, or something starts to catch fire, and you take us down the blind alley, or you tell the story too fast, or whatever, you know. And that's all on the WWE.
Yep.
And as far as
and I think that's exactly right. I think the WWE blew his gimmick three times, Mike. And maybe they were going to blow it the fourth time. I don't know. Tribute I can give to Bray Wyatt is this. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to sit here and be a hypocrite. I'm not going to say he was the world's greatest wrestler. He wasn't. His in-ring stuff was limited. We know that. But let me explain to you what really, really made me sit up and say, this Bray Wyatt guy, the WWE really has something. Probably this, I don't know, a month after he came in. I often try to watch wrestling with non-wrestling fans because I like to see their reactions. And I remember sitting with a guy who was saying, oh, God, that looks so funny. Or, oh, my God, you know, look, you can see them talking to each other, smiling, and when they're supposed to be mad. When Bray Wyatt came on and gave his little speech, I remember him saying, is there something really wrong with that guy? I mean, is he really like that? Because his facial expressions, like, he goes from a smile to a frown to whatever, like a psycho. He goes, you know, like real psychopathic people do that. They'll be laughing 1 minute and then they get dead serious and then laugh and then roll their eyes and then, you know, serious laugh. He's weird. That's a weird dude. He's probably weird for real because nobody's that good of an actor. He was that good of an actor. And for somebody to say, okay, now that guy's weird. I don't think he's kidding about some of this. He's a weird, that's a weird dude. You can't fake that. Yeah, he could fake it. When you can fake out non-wrestling fans, so they literally say, that dude has some screws loose for real. He's a little psychotic. Even non-wrestling fans got it. Bray Wyatt was the master of saying things with a smile and then a frown, to shift his eyes weird, to lock in on the camera and then focus away. His facial expressions, his body language, the whole entire thing that he would do when he was Bray Wyatt was so convincing that people who knew wrestling was fake and didn't like it because they knew it was, well, predetermined, they call it fake, would literally say, yeah, but that guy is a little off kilter because you can't fake that. It, little ticks in the way his eyes move and things, he's a little weird. Not a guy I'd really want to fight. That's the biggest tribute, Tom, you can pay to somebody because he bluffed every one of them.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. And, you know, again, we could say Bray Wyatt wasn't the greatest wrestler as far as in-ring performance, but what the stuff that he did do was, you know, it was impactful. And it kind of ran parallel to the story he was telling. The moves he did was not, you know, Andre the Giant told a great story. Could he wrestle? No, he cannot. Hulk Hogan tells a great story. Can he wrestle? No, he cannot. Those guys were attractions. Bray Wyatt is an attraction. He's not a wrestler. He's a guy that he's captivating you. He's making you think. You know, the fact that they didn't come right out and say he's you know, a Manson family cult leader or he's Jim Jones or like, they didn't come right out and say it. They left that up to you to figure out. And That was the genius of the Bray Wyatt character. There's not one thing that I didn't like about Bray Wyatt's character and where it was going until they said, and I'll be honest, until they said that he was going to fight the winner between Bobby Lashley and Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. I didn't like it. I felt it was going to hit a gigantic brick wall and ruin it. I'm glad they didn't go through it. I'm not glad that he got sick, obviously. It's a shame that he got sick and he wasn't at WrestleMania, because that would have been with an opponent that would have been, you know, for Bray Wyatt and not for somebody else, obviously. But everything that Bray Wyatt did upon his return and even before was stuff that made – it was very cerebral, made you think. It was very creative. You know, we spent a good amount of time talking about Justin's return, and he never said a word. It was by far the loudest response from a WWE audience that I remember since, you know, which one's a close second, which was the Hardy Boys returning at WrestleMania. But,
yeah, and you also have to think of it this way. Not only did he bluff the non-wrestling fans into thinking he really wasn't right in the head with the way he could maneuver his facial expressions and the way his voice changed from laughing to serious and all that stuff, but the wrestling fans who knew better were still taken in by a character that, if you wrote it down on paper and handed it to me, I would have said, this is so dumb that no one's going to be able to pull this off. People are going to laugh at it. He's going to talk to puppets, a rabbit and a vulture. He's going to come out in some kind of a Halloween mask and that you can't even hardly see in. And I don't see this working. Just like The Undertaker. If you wrote that down on paper, he's like a dead man, and he comes out with a guy named Paul Bearer, and there's going to be an urn. And when he raises the urn, The Undertaker raises up, and he's impervious to pain. You'd be like, that's so dumb. But the person behind it made it work because that's how talented they were. There's no one in the world that could have played The Undertaker better than Mark Calloway. There's no one ever going to be able to play anything close to Bray Wyatt except Wyndham Rotunda. That creation is going to probably be one of the top characters in the history of the WWE forever. But it's also going to be the most underachieving, but not because of him. Because of the fact that the WWE didn't know how to use it correctly, Todd, and that's frustrating.
Oh, absolutely. Like you said, nobody could replace Bray Wyatt in that, doing the Fiend and everything. And, you know, nobody can't replace him.
No, it's an irreplaceable character, and it's a character I think that will – the character itself will go down in history, Mike. It's just that I think there was going to be so much – there could have been so much they did that would have solidified him being right up there would probably be Undertaker's character.
Right. And think of it this way, Marcus. Think of it this way. When Colin Nash left for the WCW, what happened? Okay. They were so popular when they left that – even after the whole curtain call incident, they were so popular that the WWE at the time felt like they could get away with trying to pass other people off as being Razor and Diesel, right? And they brought two guys in. One of them was Kane. One of them ended up being Kane. But those two characters failed. And the reason why those two characters failed weren't the characters. It was that they didn't have the right people playing the characters. They didn't have Scott Hall and Kevin Nash playing those characters. They had Glenn Jacobs and Bogner, whatever his name was at the time, playing the characters, and it didn't fit.
Exactly right.
Yeah, they were big guys.
Yes.
Right. And yeah, they were big guys, but they weren't the right guys. These two, what you're talking about is you have the right guys playing the right character at the right time.
Absolutely, and that's exactly correct. When you hit lightning in a bottle and someone can play a character, You know, we often liken it to television shows where you say, well, you see Ed O'Neill and the first thing you think of is Al Bundy. You've seen the guy that played Gilligan on Gilligan's Island, the first thing you think of is Gilligan. You don't even think about the actor behind it. You think, well, that's that guy. That's Al Bundy. That's Gilligan. You're always going to think of Wyndham Rotunda as Bray Wyatt. Always. And I don't know if there's any bigger compliment than that. I really don't. You're always going to think that was him. And it's amazing that as badly as they screwed it up, what an impact he had on wrestling fans. And I only wish they would have let him run with it the right way, because you could have tripled that impact and made it something just unbelievable. So much bigger than it was. So much bigger. Anyway, of course, we also sadly lost Terry Funk. And as we had said, Terry Funk was someone who absolutely loved wrestling and got the psychology of wrestling in a different way. I compared him to Bray Wyatt because they both understood the psychology, but they had different forms of psychology. Bray Wyatt's form of psychology was more cerebral. He made you think. He made you question. He made you search for clues. He made you believe he was a madman who could potentially be a genius and not a madman. He made you believe that he could be two split personalities, one who is very happy-go-lucky and upbeat, and one that's virtually a demon. Terry Funk, on the other hand, had the benefit of, for most of his life, having crowds who weren't privy to the inside information of professional wrestling. We didn't have a lot of these spoiler sheets and behind-the-scenes things like we do now. And Terry Funk convinced the crowd that he was an absolute madman. Terry Funk had the innate ability to understand the spontaneity of psychology. For instance, I'd watched a clip where Jerry Lawler had asked for a tag team partner, and despite the fact that Terry Funk hated him and they had some brutal, bloody battles, the promoter had given him Terry Funk. And he said, at first, I said, no, I'm not doing that. I don't trust him. And supposedly, the promoter said, well, you know, the Funks own the biggest ranch in Texas, and he works for me, and I told him, if you turn on Jerry Lawler, Jerry Lawler owns your ranch, so he won't turn on you because it would cost him his ranch. Terry Funk comes out there and says, the biggest problem I have is with sissies. And I don't think you're a sissy. I don't like you. In fact, I hate you. But I don't think you're a sissy. I fought you. You're not a sissy. But a lot of these people running around here, they are sissies. They need three or four people to jump on one. Hold on, I see a sissy right now. And he just tore off after Jim Cornette, who just happened to be floating around the arena, and chased him all around the ring and backstage and everything else, yelling, sissy, sissy. And the spontaneity of that moment where you're just like, he just snapped. He's in the middle of an interview, he just snapped and went after Jim Cornette, who was just walking around because he thought he was a sissy, made Terry Funk believable as someone who you say, at the spur of the moment, this guy's a little punch drunk. Okay, from his wrestling days and his barroom brawling days, and at a moment's notice, he'd jump on you. And he's not going to be so easy to get off. You believe that with your whole heart and soul. And behind that guy was a very smart, well-educated, calm, peaceful guy. But you would have never known that. You always thought you were around a powder keg who was one tiny fraction of an inch fuse away from blowing. If you said the wrong thing one time, he'd snap. That was the beauty of Terry Funk, Todd, is that you really believed that he was this punch-drunk madman who at a moment's notice could just, you know, drop you for very little or no reason.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, Terry Funk was one of those guys who were just knows the wrestling business inside and out and behind the scenes and everything. And this is the guy who loved, had the passion for the business big time.
He really did. And Mike, he understood the spontaneity. Like, I'm sure many times he did things off script because he knew in this moment, if I do this, it's going to look totally spontaneous because it is spontaneous. But these guys are smart enough to go along with me and play along with me, and it makes a spontaneous moment, and it because it's not scripted, and you can clearly as an audience feel that didn't feel scripted, it feels real. He was very good at that.
He was very good at that. And I remember seeing a thing with Ric Flair that at one point Ric Flair and Terry Funk were in a tag team, and we got tag team together, and it was the same thing. They didn't like each other, but they were teaming up against somebody else that neither one of them liked. And what happened was that other guy, one of the other guys, tried to say something to Terry Funk, and Ric Flair looked at him and took a step back because that's what he knew about Terry Funk. Terry Funk was about to. Ric Flair said, you know, Terry Funk looked like he was going to go off on this guy, go crazy on this guy, this other guy. So yeah, that's what he does. And look, that's the thing with Terry Funk. I mean, look, people don't think that Bob Backlund was a good psychology guy. Well, early on in his career, he wasn't asked to do that. Because Bob Backlund was just this all-American NCAA wrestler, right? Olympic-type wrestler, right? Well, what happened later on in his career when he came up, oh, I'm going to run for president, or all this stuff, the crazy Bob Backlund days. And he sold that so well that you say, okay, that something switched on in his head that he's now – this nuts, this crazy that he can.
You know, the thing with Bob Backlund, Bob Backlund always had a problem with interviews. Bob Backlund would go what I would call brain freeze. He would get on there and say, well, thank you very much, Vince. You know, this is a very dangerous man I'm fighting. And he'd just stare into space. He's very dangerous, but I'm gonna do my best, and I think I can win. And thanks to all the fans for. And he seemed weird. He seemed a little weird. So when he bought into that, that was a weakness at one point, that Bob Backlund couldn't do an interview. Then he took that, and when he became a heel, and he would stare into space and do that. Let me tell you people something. You were like, he's just nuts. He's lost his mind. So he took his weakness and played it into his strength, which was a very smart thing to do. But if you watch Terry Funk, even in his movies, one of my favorite movies of all time is a movie called Paradise Alley. If you've not watched it, I suggest you do. It's about the early, early, early days of pro wrestling. When people used to say, if you can spend 5 minutes in the ring with or 2 minutes in the ring with this guy, you get a certain amount of money. Back in Hell's Kitchen in the 20s, I guess it was, or whatever, at a place called Paradise Alley, Stallone is in it. And Terry Funk is one of them. Stallone's not even the main guy. Stallone's not even the wrestler. But Terry Funk is the wrestler that's controlled by the Irish mob. And there's a part in this movie where he literally, his facial expressions, when he's arm wrestling Stallone's brother, is priceless. And he looks like a complete and utter lunatic. He looks like a punch drunk, cauliflowered eared, took way too many hits to the head, muscle head, with nothing upstairs, and not even the ability to realize he's hurt. He played that role to perfection. He was also in Over the Top, played that role to perfection. He was in, the first Roadhouse movie or whatever, played that role to perfection. Terry Funk was a very, very solid actor. And he could make you believe that he was the person that he was portraying. And there is no better compliment. I can't tell you how many times people have met an actor or someone that they knew from a television show or a movie or something and said, oh, it was so weird because they're nothing like their character. I was taken aback, you know, because you end up believing them. You end up believing it. I always go to Ed O'Neill with Al Bundy, but there are many others who were nothing like who they played, yet they could do it so well. Bray Wyatt was one of them. Terry Funk was one of them. When you have that in professional wrestling, Tom, that's probably the greatest gift you can have as a professional wrestler, and it's one you cannot teach.
Absolutely. That's something that has to be, you know, within you. And Terry Funk just, you know, there is not ever going to be another Terry Funk. You could say, you know, Cactus Jack pretty much mirrored him. He was close, they were very close friends, and he was, you know, Nick's mentor. But Terry Funk had this ability. He got inside your head, and he got you inside your head to go, well, that man is just off his rocker. Even when he was acting, even when he was just playing a role, you're like, I don't know if he's playing a role. He looks like you're just like, I don't even need to read lines. I don't even need to, you know, memorize my lines in the movie. I could just be me.
Yeah.
And when you talk to Terry Funk, he's like a it's so weird because if you talk to him, he talks like you and I. And he just
very peaceful, calm guy, jovial guy. Yeah, see, that's the thing. So wrestling lost two very, very powerful performers. One who could no longer perform, granted, which makes the Bray Wyatt thing all the sadder. I do want to mention, of course, Bob Barker died. He was in the WWE Hall of Fame. 99 years old. God bless him. We should all be so lucky as Bob Barker. But I want to talk a little bit about SmackDown because while I loved the beginning and I thought they did a wonderful job of through the middle showing some different Bray Wyatt clips, even gave some QR codes. So that if you wanted to do the QR code, it took you to clips of different Bray Wyatt things, which was a nice tribute and a nice touch. Rocking chair at the end, nice tribute, nice touch. But I think they blew something. I'll tell you what I think they blew. I think you cannot have a Terry Funk hardcore match and do the match that you did. Just don't do it. Just say this match is in honor of Terry Funk, but don't say it's a Terry Funk hardcore match when it's not even close. Not even close. When they introduced that, I said, uh-oh. I expected maybe Sheamus was going to come out and do one, and I said, well, let's see what ends up happening. Well, I think we're going to see tables and chairs and God knows what else, kendo sticks, and you might even see some blood, and they're really going to do this. They're going to pay a homage to Terry Funk. Not really. Not really at all. It was just a normal match, really. I watched it and said, okay, they're allowing some things they don't normally allow, but this is far, far from what I would call a Terry Funk hardcore match, Mike, so I was a little disappointed in that, and I thought it was not a proper tribute.
You know, that must have had Paul Heyman pulling out what was left of his hair, calling that a hardcore match. You know, because you know Terry Funk worked for Paul Heyman. I know this is PG era, but if you're gonna do, hardcore is supposed to mean something. Hardcore tables. I mean, if you don't want to take it to the extreme like ECW with, you know, barbed wire baseball bats and all that stuff, barbed wire and glass, thumbtacks. Well, maybe you can do thumbtacks because, you know, Mick Foley used to do thumbtacks all the time. So, but other than that, you have to have more than what you have. And this is a Terry. If this is going to be a Terry, you know, Funk hardcore match, then where the fuck is a branding iron?
Yes. That's what I was waiting for, Mike. You took the words right out of my mouth. Where was the branding iron? I thought they were going to pull it out from underneath the ring and clobber somebody with it or put the double whatever ranch thing on there or whatever. Even if it was just, you know, paint or whatever. I really thought something like that was going to happen. If you wanted to really do that and you thought this is necessary, we are going to, you know, Tom's mentioned cowbell too. Right. Why didn't you have that? Why didn't you have the cowbell and the branding iron, the whole thing? And don't have the Street Profits in it. Why are the Street Profits in it? There's nothing hardcore about the Street Profits. Should have been a one-on-one match anyway. And let them take it to the extreme a little bit. Let them go a little bit farther. This, after all, this is a one-shot honoring a legend. So let's get a little bit less anal about it and just do it. If you're going to do it right. So the Terry Funk hardcore match thing left me cold. I don't think it was a proper tribute to Terry Funk. The rest of the Terry Funk tribute was very nice, including Cody Rhodes coming out and explaining that as a kid, he didn't quite get Terry Funk, see? And when he's yelling at his dad that he's an egg-sucking dog, he thought, my God, see, again, he thought, my God, this guy's going to come attack my dad. That was the beauty of Terry Funk. That was the beauty of Terry Funk. And I think the problem is when you start losing these type of people. Wrestling is worse off for it because there aren't new generation Terry Funks. I don't even think there's new generation Bray Wyatts. I think there's a bunch of new generation Young Bucks. I think there's a bunch of new generation Kenny Omegas. It's not the same thing. It's not the same thing at all. And while we can use new generation Young Bucks and Kenny Omegas, we positively need new generation Terry Funks and Bray Wyatts. Because they're the thing that makes wrestling fun. They're the thing that sets wrestling apart from just being two guys pretending to fight. They're the characters that you want to wear on your T-shirt. They're the people you want to see either win and succeed or lose and get what's coming to them. This is very important. Very important to the longevity of professional wrestling as an entertainment venue, and you need those people. And I don't see them. You know, we've all pointed to MJF and saying he's a huge star, and he is, and he's a guy who gets the beauty of kayfabe, and he does. But at the end of the day, he's the Miz on a winning streak. And with a little less restrictions placed on him of what he can say. And that's fine. But we need those other people. We need those people who can make you truly and honestly say, this is a weird person. This is a dangerous person. We have our fill of egotistical people with loud mouths. Every wrestler that's a heel is an egotistical person with a loud mouth. Not everyone is Terry Funk. Not everyone is Bray Wyatt. They're unique characters. I don't know if we got unique anymore, Todd. It seems like we have this standard of loud mouth, braggadocious, egotistical bad guy, and somewhat smart-ass faces who are tough and honorable to an extent, but not above taking a shortcut. That's your new fashion pro wrestling. I don't know if we have Bray Wyatts and Terry Funks in the wings.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, we should have had that, but by the looks of that, we don't have the next big thing as a wrestler. We're supposed to be Roman
not
Reigns.
Not with that. Not those type, we don't. We may have the next, you know, big stars, but the stars are different, you know? The Godfather tells a story that before they hooked him up with the Nation of Domination, they were going to bring back Papa Shango. It wasn't going to be corny. It wasn't going to be about necessarily, you know, voodoo curses making you vomit. It was going to be about someone who truly and honestly believed in voodoo, a tribal person who was out of his goddamn mind and truly was into the voodoo culture. They even showed some pictures of it, which they changed, they modified them a little bit. And he said it was going to be a very dark character. It wasn't going to be a corny, you know, come out with a smoking skull thing. It was going to be a serious character. And Vince McMahon said, forget it. We're going to put you with the Nation of Domination. I would have loved to have seen something like that. I do think the audience wants a little bit. You know, The Undertaker himself had said Bray Wyatt's like the new face of fear, right? We don't have a face of fear anymore. It's not going to be Karrion Kross. He can't do it. God bless him. He's a nice guy. And he is a very, very, what's the right word for it? He cares very much about his performance and the business. And he's good at what he does, but he's not that. And he's never going to be that. Because he can't be. There are just people who can't be. You can love baseball. You can love it with your heart and soul. Doesn't mean you can hit a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. Maybe you're a good fielder. Maybe you're a good utility player. But you're not that guy. And he's not that guy. And there just isn't one right now. And I don't know if there ever will be. People are saying, well, you know, Joe Gacy was a, you know, what would have happened if you ordered Bray Wyatt on Wish? It's not the same thing, Mike.
Right, it's not the same thing. I mean, look, on the women's side, they got certain people that get it, that are good at psychology. You know, I mean, look, you look at Nikki Cross and you look at what she does and what how she talks, and you look at her and you say, there's just something off with that woman, right? Something's there that you can't put your finger on that it's off, right? That's the closest thing I can see to that type of character that even when she says something, you're going, what? What are you talking about? Doesn't make sense. It makes sense in her head and to her, but it doesn't make sense to you. You know, and that's the thing. And that, there aren't very many people that can carry a character like that off with that kind of psychobabble type thing where the way that Bray Wyatt could, the way that Terry Funk could. And by the way, what you're thinking about is the name of that ranch he called it was the Double Cross Ranch.
The Double Cross Ranch, exactly, which was brilliant. Listen, you can't – it's things you can't teach. That's the problem. And I don't know where the next person like that's coming from. I don't know. Aside from that, what the hell was on SmackDown? Well, you know, their plans were thrown asunder, obviously. It's understood. So I'm not even going to rate it. Because when something this unbelievable happens, and you have to change your plans so quickly, you just can't expect certain things. I will note this from SmackDown. Finn Balor is done as a performer. If they don't think enough of him at this stage of the game to literally at least have a double count out or a disqualification loss or a disqualification victory or a gang jumping of LA Knight. If they just have it, no, you just lay down and die. Boom. I know they're promoting LA Knight, and they should. And by the way, LA Knight's tribute to Bray Wyatt was excellent. But this tells me a lot about the future of Finn Balor. I think the future of Finn Balor is going to lie in a tag team. It's going to lie in a tag team with J.D. McDonagh and Finn Balor. That's what I think. Finn Balor is a solo performer. I think that they've washed their hands. When they said that was the biggest victory so far for L.A. Knight, Tom, they weren't kidding. I was shocked that it was a clean victory.
Yeah, you and me both. I thought for sure it was gonna be a gang jumping by the Judgment Day, even though they're on Raw. I thought.
Or even the Miz. Maybe the Miz would come out and distract him and he'd lose.
Something at least. I will mention this because I think he deserves his due. I think the only one I can think back to the Terry Funk psychology and who else had that kind of ability to be a nut job as much as Terry Funk was, go from like a soft-spoken dude to a crazy, like, you know, out of control nut was Brian Pillman. I can't think of anybody else.
Yeah, but Pillman could do it, but Pillman wasn't the same as Terry Funk. Pillman never felt like he was. Pillman felt like he was dangerous in a different way. Pillman's gimmick was, I'll say whatever I want to say at any time because I'm not wrapped too tight. And you never know when or what I'll do. I'll back jump you. I'll jump you in a parking lot. I'll do whatever because I'm nuts. Pull a gun on you. Terry Funk was the guy at the bar when you walked into a bar just to have a drink, who said, I don't like the tie you're wearing. How dare you wear a tie? Take it off. And you're just like, Jesus Christ, this guy's fucking insane. Why is he picking on me? But you know that if you didn't do what he said, he's going to attack you. Or you could take it off and he could say, I was just kidding. What kind of a man are you to let me bully you like that? Are you a sissy? You never knew where he was coming from. He was one of those people that you're like, he is just one of these guys who's just punched, not all there, crazy. Brian Pillman was more cerebral. He got under your skin on purpose. And he was dangerous in a different way. He was dangerous in a more sinister way. Where Terry Funk was just dangerous in that barroom brawler. You never know whether he's going to slap you on the back and buy you a drink or choke you out. That was the difference there. But LA Knight gave a great tribute to Bray Wyatt, although I really thought, and I still say, it was supposed to be Braun Strowman. And they said Braun Strowman was going to come in for that reason. And then they didn't let Braun Strowman get in the ring to say anything. I don't know if he said anything afterwards. Just like Cody talked about Terry Funk, I was told that Braun Strowman was supposed to talk about Bray Wyatt. That did not happen. Maybe it happened after the, you know, TV is off. I don't know. No one sent me anything saying that, so I don't think so. Maybe it'll happen Monday. I don't know when it will. I do want to mention something that happened when I was on vacation, though, because I did watch wrestling. And even though I thought Raw was very average Raw, I have to make note of one thing. I don't think I have laughed so hard in a year at any one thing as when Cody Rhodes said that J.D. McDonagh, big head on a little body, made him look like he was a human Funko Pop. That had to be one of the best lines in the last, well, since the Usy line, probably, on wrestling. I laughed so hard because, Mike, you can't get any more accurate than that. It's exactly what he looks like.
Yeah, J.D. McDonagh is like a human, what are these, those head nodding dolls, those,
Funko Pop, yeah. A bobblehead.
Yeah, Funko Pop, yeah. that type of thing. And nothing comes close to Usy, because that was priceless, and Jay and Roman just couldn't keep it together, right? I mean, that was priceless. The number one line probably in the for the last 10 years was the Usy line, you know. But
I do agree with that, but then he had the benefit of doing it live in the ring. Cody didn't. Cody said it backstage where you couldn't hear the crowd's reaction. But I thought that was that was the best line Cody has said since he's come back here, Tom.
Well, let me tell you what. I like you, laughed so hard, actually. That is one of the funniest lines I've heard ever. Not since Cody came back in years. It's accurate. It is 100% accurate. It's either a Funko Pop or a bobblehead, like you said. But if they use that as a marketing thing and make JD make fun of Funko Pops, I'd buy one.
That's what they should do. They should have his T-shirt designed like he's a Funko Pop. But you know why it was funny? It's because I noticed it, but I was like, well, you know, they're not going to bring that to anybody's attention. But he has an unusually large head for a small body. And every time he came out, I'm like, he's really, his head is like way too big for his body. And just Cody Rhodes mentioning that just absolutely cracked me up, Todd, because it's exactly what he looks like.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, that reminds me of somebody had a big head, like in a cartoon or something, with a small body. I think it was Stewie from Family Guy who has a big head too, like a
football. Yeah, exactly. One of those types. It's very funny. That line seemed to be spontaneous a little bit, and I thought Cody needs to do a little more of that. I think. Anyway, pretty average SmackDown other than that. I mean, but again, there's no that was obviously on Raw, but this SmackDown this week, pretty average SmackDown. But then again, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Not everybody there, I would imagine, was very close to Bray Wyatt. A lot of them probably didn't even work with him or talk to him too much. But the people that did, here's what you can judge from. The people who did were devastated. The people that did were devastated. I heard the Big Show. He was devastated. Obviously, Braun Strowman was devastated. Chris Jericho said he was one of the most creative and unique guys. He was devastated. Seth Rollins said while he couldn't be there, he wanted to shoot a video, and he did shoot a video as a tribute to him. Rusev shot a video as a tribute to him, saying he was one of the nicer guys and a guy who remembered him when, you know, he was just a nothing, who was just, you know, punching bag for Bray Wyatt, learning moves. And yet when he got to the NXT and, you know, seriously, Bray Wyatt remembered him and said, oh, I know who you are, and made him feel welcome and stuff. The people who knew him were absolutely devastated. And even the people who didn't felt that huge, huge sense of loss. That's a huge tribute. It really is. That's a huge tribute. And I can't help but feel, like I said, that wrestling has become a little less creative now that he's not. And I don't know who's going to pick up the slack, because I don't see one. Now, while we're talking, AEW All In is going on. And I'm going to give you some results, so if you don't want to hear them, you might want to shut the show off. The pre-show, Hook defeated Jack Perry. So Hook has regained his FTW title by defeating Jack Perry. MJF and Adam Cole defeated Mark Davis and Kyle Fletcher, which is Aussie Open. So they're the new Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions. That's the pre-show. We'll talk about some of the other ones in a minute, but let's start there. So I believe that I didn't see Hook lose it at any point, but I guess Hook did lose it. He is now, once again, Mike, the FTW champion.
Yeah, I did see him lose it. So yeah, and it makes sense for him to be the FTW champion. Now, granted, how long is he going to stay there? How long is he going to stay as the champion? Because apparently, we've talked about this before. Apparently, the WWE is after him. So, and if the WWE is coming to call, and I don't see AEW being able to keep Hook. But that's neither here nor there. Yeah, well, yeah, it makes sense for him to have it. It makes sense to. They won. It's a heel title, but obviously it looks like they're trying to flip him face, flip Hook face. All right, but it's a heel title. It's a heel belt, right? That FTW gimmick is a heel gimmick, right? So
yeah, to an extent it is. So I don't know, but. I know Jack Perry, who had recently, you know, ditched the Jungle Boy thing, I don't think thought it was going to cause him to lose more matches than when he was Jungle Boy. So that's interesting. And it's, to a certain extent, Jack Perry's brought a lot of this shit on himself because he was asked to go out and do signings and some publicity for AEW. And from what I'm told, just dropped the ball big time. Just was unwilling to, uninterested, didn't react with fans very well, interact with fans very well, and just basically didn't get the job done. Let's put it that way. And, you know, that's the funny thing. You got to understand with wrestling that some of wrestling is not in the ring. Some of wrestling is promotion. And if you're asked to do some things to help promote your federation and to drum up interest, you know, you got to be the type of guy who's going to go out there and be able to do that. It doesn't matter whether you're a face or a heel. If you're asked to do it, you got to go out there and you got to do it in a way that it's going to honor the federation, right? He didn't do that. He didn't do that, and I think that hurts. So what's your thoughts on Jack Perry and Hook, Tom?
I mean, you know, for Jack Perry to snub, you know, you just gotta do whatever, you know, whatever you're asked to do. If you're gonna be a wrestler and you're gonna be in the public spotlight, then whatever they ask you to, you sign a contract, so it's gotta be, you know, that's gotta be included in, you know, being available and being accessible to the fans, whether you're a bad guy or a good guy.
No, absolutely, absolutely correct. By the way, Derek had mentioned that, you know, if Bray Wyatt didn't die, they probably just would have thrown up the Terry Funk graphic and maybe had the 10-bell salute. And that's probably accurate. But I think they figured it this way. I think they figured if we're going to do Bray Wyatt clips through the whole show, we got to do something more for Terry Funk than just the 10-bell salute and the graphic. So they did the match. But the match wasn't a good tribute. That's all I'm saying. Let's see. What do we got going on next? Yeah, we had MJF and Adam Cole defeat Aussie Open. So they're the new Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions. I'm going to be honest with you, Todd. I thought maybe this was going to be where they turned on each other or whatever, but I guess not.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, that match right there on that pre-show for All In London, and we all kind of knew that they're going to be the Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions. But if they wrestle tonight, I get that feeling you're going to see one of them going to double-cross the other.
Yeah, the night's still young. That's true. So we'll see about that. New tag team, new Ring of Honor tag team champions, Mike. Does that surprise you at all?
It kind of does. Because, again, this is another one of these things. And the WWE is famous for this. A company that throws two guys together. You know, and I wouldn't be at all surprised because over the last few weeks, they've been making a big deal, even using Kyle O'Reilly to do it with, that Kyle O'Reilly does not trust, you know, MJF, right?
Right.
You know, so I'm going to go ahead and agree with you. Something's going to happen in a match. And you know what? I foresee Kyle O'Reilly having something to do with this match. And the fact of the matter is I think they're on the way to flipping. If they haven't done it yet, they're on the way to flipping MJF face. And probably what's going to happen is you're going to see that team just break up and something's going to happen and they're going to have to give up the titles they just won because there's animosity between the team due to Kyle O'Reilly.
Yeah, I see that coming too. Okay, then we go to the main show. CM Punk defeats Samoa Joe for the Real World title. Gee, CM Punk wins on a pay-per-view. Do tell. No surprise there as far as I'm concerned. I mean, CM Punk's favorite punching bag, I guess, lately is Samoa Joe. He likes working with him, and I guess Joe don't mind dropping to him. So there you go, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, you have to know that's going to happen. I mean, they're not, CM Punk is not flying out to England, you know, to lose. Because, you know, it must be in his contract. Honestly, I'm over CM Punk. I mean, I just read a story that there was a reported shoot fight in the AEW locker room at the event with him and Jack Perry. I don't know if that's – it says a shoot fight, and it's – the article is saying how the locker room is toxic and this adds to it. I think it sounds like it's legit. And I would.
It probably was because, you know, him and Perry were not friends. That's for damn sure. All right. Then we have Bullet Club Gold, which is Juice Robinson, Jay White, and Kazuki Takeshita, defeats Hangman Page, Kenny Omega, and Kota Ibushi. I have to say, I am a little bit surprised on this one. You know, the WWE was trying really hard to sign Kenny Omega. That didn't happen. Adam Page is reportedly not super happy with his position in AEW, Mike. But what's your thoughts on this match?
Right. And think about this. What was Adam Page doing 8 months, a year ago? He was hooked up with who? He was hooked up with the Dark Order, who was tied to, you know, Brody Lee, right? But yeah, we'll see. And this, I mean, basically, you know, what's his name is doing his best imitation of James Storm's, you know, type thing. Yeah, he's got that flipping clothesline thing that he does over the top row, but he's a guy, if he's not that happy and there's animosity and the thing is, you know, and of course, yeah, I'd like to see, you know, if none of these guys who are Cody's friends and apparently the elite guys are still friends with Cody to some extent, and that includes you know, Hangman, you know, Just because they didn't sign him now doesn't mean they're not going to sign him at all.
No, absolutely correct. All right, let's see if there's any. Yeah, there's another one that has just finished. We have FTR, which is Dax Harwood and Cash Wheeler. Cash Wheeler, by the way, was iffy for this because he was arrested for assault with a deadly weapon, which is a handgun. From what I'm hearing, it was some sort of a road rage incident. He's going to have to answer for that eventually, but I guess he made it to the show. And not only did he make it to the show, but I guess Tony Khan has enough faith in the situation that they actually defeated the Young Bucks and retained the AEW World Tag Team title. So his arrest did not detour Tony Khan or Cash Wheeler from being there, or Tony Khan from letting them get the victory, Tom.
Yeah, I'm actually shocked that they, you know, let him travel overseas. But, you know, I'm happy that they did because people paid. You know, there's a bunch of people that did pay to see that match. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of fans that wanted to see Young Bucks and FTR. And that was going to culminate at eight, you know, AEW's All In. So good for them. Let them travel. I'm sure there were some restrictions, as in like go do your match and then come right back, kind of deal. So I'm sure he's flown. He's on his way back right now. He's probably not spending an amount of time over in England. So he's going to have to.
I mean, I don't know what the thing is, but I am a little bit surprised as well. Listen, maybe they let him go do his match. I'm just surprised that Tony Khan seems to have the confidence in him, Todd, to let him win that, you know, retain it, because must think he's going to get off on this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely right there. Like you said, that match with FTR and the Young Bucks and with Dash Wheeler, Dash Wheeler, formerly known with the Revival. I'm surprised they let him to do that match over in England, and I'm surprised with the passport and everything, and with
I'm more surprised they won. I was thinking along the lines of he'll probably be able to do the match, but Tony Khan is going to probably have him lose because we don't know what the future holds. But I guess not, Mike.
I guess not either. Apparently Tony Khan has the confidence that it's nothing. Not that assault is nothing, but that it's not. It's. I don't want to say a small thing, but that it's not a big deal, right? That it's a big deal, but it's not really a big deal. That he's probably gonna not serve any time in jail and have very little, if anything, you know, in terms of, you know, possibly having an ankle bracelet or whatever. I don't know. But
yeah, probably not too many restrictions. They must feel very confident in that. That's the only thing I can deduce from this. So we then have Eddie Kingston, Orange Cassidy, Best Friends, which is Chuck Taylor and Trent Beretta, and Penta El Zero defeated the Blackpool Combat Club, which is John Moxley, Claudio Castagnoli, which of course is Cesaro, Wheeler Utah, and Santana and Ortiz in that Stadium Stampede match. That one surprises me too a little bit. If I had to bet on it, I would have said the Blackpool Combat Club wins this one, Mike, but guess not.
Guess not either. And that's the thing. And look, we know that Claudio and what's his name aren't going back to the WWE, and probably Santana and Ortiz aren't going to go to the WWE. But Will U is decently young enough and is an up-and-coming enough guy that at some point the WWE is going to look at him.
Yeah, probably. Probably. Blackpool Combat Club, you know, I mean, you know, John Moxley, Claudio Castagnoli, it was me, and I don't know. I would have thought, Tom, that they would have got the victory, but I guess they're going for the, you know, swerve. I don't think Tom is there anymore. So what's your thoughts on the Blackpool Combat Club losing this match, Todd?
I like you said, I was sort of shocked. I thought they were going to win that match, too, against Best Friends, Orange Cassidy, and Penta, and Eddie Kingston there. I thought it was going to be like the Blackpool Combat Club was going to win that match, and I was like, shockingly, they didn't.
Now, here's the one that really shocks me. I guess I shouldn't be shocked. I guess I saw it coming, truth be told, but I think this is a mistake and a big one. Saraya Paige defeated Sheeta, Toni Storm, Britt Baker for the AEW Women's World title. I think this is a mistake. And I'll tell you why I think it's a mistake. Even when she was at 100%, Paige was overrated. She was okay. She was good. She wasn't great. And if you're going to take these women's titles seriously, it's probably not a great idea to put it on someone who has very major restrictions in what she can and cannot do. It wasn't that long ago she couldn't even be thrown over the top rope. And now she's your champion. I understand she's very high profile. I understand that she made a big name for herself. I get all that. But now what are the quality of these matches going to be? When it's not a four-way match, when it's one-on-one, what are the quality of matches going to be? I don't know the answer to that. And, I'm iffy about this because on one hand, I get it. She's the biggest name. But on the other hand, Mike, I'm looking at this saying, I don't know. I don't know if she's going to be able to put the kind of matches on that AEW fans are going to want to see out of their World Women's Champion.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. Think about it this way. You know, you look at the other three women. They're for professional wrestlers, right? Because professional wrestlers aren't totally healthy all the time, 100%. But I'll tell Britt Baker and the other three women, Hikaru Shida, and of course Toni Storm are the healthier of the three. I think Toni Storm still has a lot of potential. And to tell you the truth, those other two women, even though Adam Cole is there, I still think Britt Baker would be better off in the WWE, and I think that I would love to see matches between Sheeta and Asuka, or Sheeta and you know, Io Sky.
Absolutely. I do have to bring this up because it bothers me. You know, Tony Khan is one of these guys who says, well, you know, Hulk Hogan can't even come around the arena because he once said the N-word out of anger when his daughter was being used and abused. And some other people can't come around because they have this political view or that view. But it's okay for Saraya to be a woman's champion after all kinds of porn tapes, after she's been arrested I don't know how many times. After Alberto Del Rio and her got engaged in fist fights in airports and everything else. So, you know, here's the thing. You're either going to be the guy who says, look, I accept no bullshit, or you're going to be the guy that says, I accept bullshit if I like you, or you agree, I agree with your bullshit. You got to do one of the two. And Tony Khan does not do one of the two. Taz has allegations of sexual harassment on him from a long, long time ago. He's still there. It starts to get me annoyed when I see things like this because this selective morality it's worse than no morality. I'd rather have the Vince McMahon philosophy of do what you want to do and we'll still use you because whatever. If we think we can use you, business is business. That's better than, oh, no, we're above that sort of thing, except in this case and except in that case and except in this case. Because that's hypocrisy, and that bothers me, Tom.
20 minutes. Hello? Oh, yeah, okay. There I am. Yeah, Tony Khan is very selective with who he, who he punishes. And I think that if you're going to be the guy in charge, then you need to say, everybody needs to follow the rules the same way and not be, because of their star power, their name, whatever, they need to, regardless of who you are, you did the crime, and you can't have Hulk Hogan not be allowed to come because of something that happened 8 years ago, but, Cash Wheeler waves somebody in a road rage incident, and you're basically rewarding him by letting the tag team keep the belts. Like, what kind of message does that send?
Yeah. Now, they have set the all-time attendance record, they said, with 80,846 fans, which beats WrestleMania 32 in 2016 with 80,709. So they beat them by 135 fans. That's probably going to be beaten by this year's WrestleMania. So I don't put much stock in that, and I'll tell you why, Mike. This is like one of their first big event in the UK. So it's a big event. WWE's been around forever during these events and did them many times in the same areas. So next time when they hold a big event at Wembley Stadium, if they draw 80,000, then I'll be impressed. This time it's something new, so everybody was out there, looking to see what it's going to be about. But still impressive that you were able to sell that many tickets.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. You can do it if you can do it one time, fine. But do it over and over and over and over and over again. That can prove something to you. The WWE has done it over and over and over again. They've done it in Wembley Stadium. They've done it.
Oops, hold on a minute. Okay, go ahead. But wait a minute, we're having trouble with the phone lines. Go ahead, there.
So. You do it one time, fine. Keep doing it. That's going to prove something to me.
I agree with that. You got to do it on a consistent basis. Your one shots because you're new kid on the block or whatever in a certain area, that's one thing. If the WWE were to go to, for instance, when the WWE goes to Saudi Arabia the first time, oh, my God, everybody in the world was there. They could have sold it out. If they had a bigger stadium, they'd have sold it out, right? If they had 100,000. Stadium, they'd have sold it out. But could they do it the second time, the third time? I don't know. Depends on what people thought of the first time. So I guess we'll see. No results in yet on Chris Jericho versus Will Ospreay. No results in on Darby Allin and Sting versus Swerve Strickland and Christian Cage in that coffin match. No results in on the House of Black versus Billy Gunn and the Acclaimed. And, of course, MJF and Adam Cole. So that's where it's standing now. If there's any updates during the show while we're still on the air, then we'll give them to you. It sounds like, it's been a good event so far. I just wonder, is this main event, which I guess now is going to be MJF and Adam Cole. Now we do have one in. Yes, Darby Allin and Sting did defeat Swerve Strickland and Christian Cage in that coffin match. So Darby Allin and Sting take the victory on this one, Todd.
I'm absolutely right there. Like you said, that match, we thought Christian Cage and Swerve Strickland was going to take the match the way it was going, it looked like.
Yeah, I'll tell you something, though. When it comes to Sting, Sting was the one person that I agree with. John Moxley said I wasn't treated well in WWE. Bullshit. You might not have liked your character, but you were treated just fine. You were one of the top guys, man. Chris Jericho was always one of the top guys. All these guys who said, I wasn't treated so well, yeah, you were. Even Rusev was treated pretty well. Thing was not. To the embarrassment of the WWE, Sting only WrestleMania match, he lost. There was no excuse for that. No excuse. I know the situation was, can't let it look like a WCW guy come over here and beat the top WWE guy. Why? He's in WWF now. He's a legend. You should have let him have that victory. I said it when it happened. I'll say it till the day I die. That was a huge mistake. And in this particular case, I think Tony Khan is using Sting better than Vince McMahon or Triple H would have used him had he stayed, Mike.
Right, and that's the thing. And look, I could have told you who was going to win that match. You got a guy who's using a thing called the coffin drop as
that's true.
The thing. You got Sting, who's basically on a retirement tour, you know, and you're telling me that those two guys are going to lose a match that's one, you know, built for one guy, and two, the guy that he's tagging with is on basically the retirement tour.
Right. Yeah, very unlikely that they were going to drop that match. But Sting's been treated very well by Tony Khan, I have to admit. So I'm glad for him. No results in yet on anything else, and probably not likely to be, because I'm guessing that the Chris Jericho and Will Ospreay match is going to last a while. So we probably won't get the results before we go off the air. So, congratulations to AEW for setting an attendance record for professional wrestling in the UK. I don't know if they've set a record for it in the United States. I guess they haven't. They got to do it in the United States for it to be the official United States record, but overall, they've set the attendance record. Now, I'm not even sure that's true, though, because did I not hear that in Japan and something, they drew like 90 or 100,000 people at some point in one of these stadiums, Mike?
I thought it might have been maybe in China or some place like that, where, you know, China's got a billion people and, you know, or in that area, or maybe in India or something like that, where the billion people, whatever it is. Yeah.
I thought it was New Japan. I thought they had that big event, and it drew like 90-some-odd thousand people, but maybe I'm wrong. I guess I must be, because they're saying this is the all-time attendance record. So, listen, good for them. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of people. Here's what I think that AEW needs to do now. They need to springboard off of this and centrally focus on the people who they want to be the faces of their company, and they want to be their top guys, and take this thing on the road and really do it upright. This is going to be the thing that could help springboard their ratings and lead them. I mean, when someone hears you set an all-time attendance record, if you haven't watched the show, you might be curious as to, oh, well, what am I missing? Maybe I'll watch it. So they need to take this victory, and they need to run with it, Tom. And they're going to have to do that by streamlining themselves a little bit and springboarding off of this to hopefully get some better ratings.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if they do it once, they need to know, they need to get things in order and go, okay, well, it's possible. So now, and we've proven it's possible. So now who do we want to be the flag bearer, if you will, of the company, and, you know, see if we could get that, you know, that kind of following again when we have a huge event like All In. 80,000 plus people, a lot of people, and God bless them. You know, I'm happy for them. That's good news. You know, it wasn't 30,000, you know, but all intents and purposes, they really need to get their, you know, now's the time to get your crap together and prove that you could do it again and not that you're just a, a flash in the pan or it was a fluke.
Absolutely. And listen, you also have to go back to the zero bullshit thing, okay? You can't be selective in your enforcement, because I'm reading the article here that says that there was indeed a reported backstage brawl between Jack Perry and CM Punk just moments before Punk's match. I'm trying to see if there's any actual meat to this. It says that Punk went after or possibly hit Jack Perry. If he struck, I'm going to tell you this right now, and I'm not exaggerating. Perry got in his face and called him a pussy and called him a punk and called him everything else under the sun. If he struck Perry, he has to be fired. Period, end of conversation. He has to be fired and fired on the spot. Because if you're going to allow that with CM Punk, then you have to allow it with everybody. Is that what you're going to do? So if Orange Cassidy wants to deck somebody who calls him something, that's okay? At some point, you've got to take control of the ship. Tony Khan does not have control of the ship. This is your biggest show. This is your crowning glory moment, and you're going to let CM Punk override it again. He overrode the last one, didn't he? You had such a great pay-per-view, and then there's the scrum with CM Punk spitting all over it and takes all the air out of the room, takes all of the momentum that you had and crushes it, because the news cycle isn't what a great event it was. The news cycle is CM Punk disrupted the scrum and there was a big fight. Now you've set the all-time attendance record, and what's everybody talking about? CM Punk and Jack Perry got in a big fight. I didn't want to be right about this, but man, oh man, did we ever call this? Every single person on this show, every single person on our panel said, you cannot rehire CM Punk. Because the message that it sends is that you can get away with anything you want then. You can do whatever you want. Now it's saying that Perry actually confirmed reports of the altercation. I don't know. I don't know about this. This is going to test Tony Khan. This is the big test. Now, if they just got into a shoving match and a shouting match, you still have to reprimand both of them. But if CM Punk, after all the legal ramifications of what he did last time, actually struck Jack Perry, he's got to be fired. And if he is not fired, then I will never take AEW seriously. The inmates are running the asylum, and you couldn't give a fuck. And that's just as simple as that. Mike, this is just outrageous on what should be their biggest friggin' day.
Yeah, it is outrageous. I mean, look, you know, Jack Perry's attitude notwithstanding, it always seems that things like this happen, and who starts it? CM Punk. Oh, and by the way, Marcus, you're right. But with the top thing, it was a New Japan show. But it was in South Korea, New Japan WCW show in South Korea, in like North Korea or South Korea, one of them. And it was 165,000 actual attendance.
Holy crap. Well, I knew it. I knew I heard that about New Japan somewhere. Thanks for looking that up. That's never going to be beat. 165,000 people. Jesus. Where the hell do they hold this thing? That has to be the biggest stadium in the world. Soccer doesn't draw that many people. That's never going to be beaten, ever. That's never, ever going to be beaten. I guess they've just disqualified that one and said, you know, forget that one. Because they're saying this is the all-time attendance record. Clearly, I knew it was. But this, anyway, should be your crowning moment. This should be the moment when Tony Khan goes to reporters and they say, what do you think about, you've set the all-time attendance record? And he says, isn't this wonderful? It goes to show you that AEW is growing by leaps and bounds, that people are interested in our product, that we're delivering and the fans are loving it. That's what the question should be. The first question is going to be, what about CM Punk hitting Jack Perry? Why does this always have to be the case? If CM Punk was even a little bit respectful of his job or cared a little bit, he'd walk away from it. He'd walk away from it and just say, you know what? You're not worth losing my job over. You're not worth the hassle. Say what you want to say. Blow it out your ass. I've got bigger fish to fry. I'm one of the, you know, top guys here. Nope, can't do it. I can get away with anything because Tony Khan don't dare fire me because I run the place. If CM Punk runs the place, then I pity the place. Now, if these reports are true, and apparently Jack Perry has confirmed it, if these reports are true, and CM Punk actually struck him, I mean, he could file assault charges on him right now. Right now. I don't know what's going on in his head. This is a man with a very fragile ego. This is a guy who just cannot take any negativity on himself or any adverse opinions. He has to be the top guy. He has to be the guy in charge. He has to be above reproach. He has to have control over every situation. I'm starting to feel sorry for his wife. Because if he's like that in his relationships, then I don't know what the hell is going on with AJ Lee. It's almost unbelievable. It's almost unbelievable that this has happened twice now. Two big events, this one bigger than the last, that the news has shifted from how good the AEW pay-per-view is to backstage trouble with CM Punk. How many times does this have to happen, Tom?
Yeah, this actually kind of pisses me off because the big story should be the attendance record next to, of course, Collision in Korea, but, you know, that was, you know, 30 years ago. The big story should be the attendance record, the matches, the, you know, how for an up-and-coming company, you know, that's still in its infant stages, the big story is going to be CM Punk and Jack Perry get into it, and Jack Perry is, by the way, Jack Perry's forced to leave the stadium. Unbelievable. Why is that?
Yeah, that's
why
true.
Why is that going to be the big story? What should have happened? And Tony Khan, forgive me, but Tony Khan's a wuss. Tony Khan is an absolute wuss, and he's just the desk master to CM Punk. No, honestly, whoever started it is now irrelevant. They should both be reprimanded. Honestly, CM Punk should be fired. If he threw a punch, if he actually struck Jack Perry, he not only should have stopped charges, but CM Punk should be gone because this ain't a first offense. And to be honest with you, credibility away from, I don't know how these guys that are wrestlers, performers for AEW are even putting up with this. What kind of message? Again, I go back. Phrase, what kind of message is sending? And the fact that people are there that are woefully unhappy.
Your phone is breaking up, but I get the point. Listen, here's the thing. Derek is right. Derek in the chat room saying, you could just fire them both. I agree. Now, I didn't think that with the Young Bucks, and I'll tell you why. Because when CM Punk says, if you don't like it, come to my dressing room, that's a challenge to your manhood. That's a challenge. Now, should you have been as, you know, vice president or whatever the hell you are, should you have been smart enough to say, I ain't going to get lured into that? Yes. But at the same token, you can't let CM Punk challenge your manhood and you just say, okay, I'll stay away because I'm so afraid of him. They had to do something to show him, look, man, you're not the boss here. You don't make those type of threats. You don't tell us to come to your dressing room and talk to you. Well, we will. But on this particular occasion, Perry is just as guilty. unless CM Punk knocked on his dressing room door and when he opened it, punched him in the face, in which case Perry has no responsibility. If they started jawjacking, Perry should have been smart enough to say, I'm avoiding CM Punk because I don't want to have any issues on what's going to be the biggest day in AEW history. I'm just going to avoid the idiot and let him be a mouth almighty. Let him be a think he's the king of the world. I don't care. He should have been smart enough to do that. If he didn't, if him and CM Punk sought each other out, they both should be fired, yes. The only way that Perry should remain is if CM Punk literally sought him out in his dressing room. And when he opened the door, punched him in the face. Then that's CM Punk's total fault. It's not even Perry's fault the other way, really, but because nothing says Perry threw a punch. Perry actually went and sought him out and said, hey, you talking shit about, well, then you know what? You started the bullshit, and you shouldn't have, because you don't have that seniority. You don't have that whatever to say, I can start shit with CM Punk. You just need to, unfortunately, swallow it and say, I'll stay away from him. But you don't need to swallow it if he comes and challenges you. You don't need to do that. You got the right to defend yourself. So we'll see what the circumstances is. If CM Punk sought out Jack Perry, then Jack Perry should not fight. If they both sought out each other or bumped into each other or whatever it happened to be, and they mutually decided they were going to go at it, they both need to go. Why are they any different than anybody else? How about if you were working in, I don't know, a restaurant, and all of a sudden just you and another worker who didn't get along just start brawling and had to be separated, and you had, you know, customers and everything else there, you'd both be fired. How come they're special? No, instead CM Punk is going to be rewarded. He beats Samoa Joe. You know what I instantly would have done? I would have said, well, guess what? The match has changed. Samoa Joe's winning. And if you don't like that, take your fucking ball and go home. Simple as that. I'm tired of this nonsense. This is what you get from like 20-year-olds who are just breaking into the business, and there's tension in the locker room, and they're like, oh, everybody's trying to take my spot. CM Punk is how old? How old is he? 47 or something? Are you going to grow up at some point? Any point? When you're not fighting with 20-year-olds? Could that possibly happen? You're supposed to be a mentor to some of these people. Instead, you're being an obnoxious prick. That's good for the business? That's good for AEW? Tony Khan needs to take the bull by the horns here. You've ruined a second one now. Tom is right. Every single article should be broke attendance records, wonderful event, fans were happy. What a great day for AEW. Instead, it's all going to be about the backstage fight. Thanks to CM Punk again. So what do these fights have in common, folks? Does it have the Young Bucks in common? No. Does it have Kenny Omega in common? No. It has CM Punk in common. That's the common denominator. So that's who needs to go. And if Jack Perry's got a problem, he can go too. Doing nothing. If he does nothing, if Tony Khan does nothing about this, Todd, it just goes to show you that AEW is not being run the way a company is going to be run, and there's going to be a lot of people making their exit from it because they're not going to work in that kind of environment.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about CM Punk and everything, back in June when the WWE was in Rosemont, Illinois at the former Rosemont Horizon Center, when CM Punk made a backstage appearance, and he was told to leave because he don't want to have trouble with CM Punk with everybody, with the history he had with Vince McMahon and company back several years back when he was with the WWE.
Well, CM Punk's going to make himself a victim. I can guarantee you here's going to be the story. I went to Jack Perry's dressing room to extend my hand in friendship and to tell him what a wonderful performer he is. Now I think the world of him, and I was only trying to educate him on the proper way to use glass so that it wouldn't hurt his career. And he called me a washed-up has-been and my wife a whore and my dog wished my dog dead. And then he tried to kill me with a bazooka, but I was able to get the bazooka away from him and slap him in self-defense. I'm a hero, and he's a punk. That's what's going to be his story. We already know how CM Punk works this. That's going to be his story. I did nothing wrong. I was a perfect gentleman. It was Perry who did it. You're also 47 years old. I got news for you. If you're a veteran in this business and there's some punk starting trouble with you at 24 years old who barely has his feet wet in this business, you know what you tell him? You tell him, stay away from me, kid. You're going nowhere in this business because you're unrespectful of the people who could teach you. So just stay away from me. Learn it yourself then. Don't ask me for help because you're not getting any. And just leave me the F alone. That's it. Fist fights with him. You don't insist he leaves the building. Come on. Grow up. Holy cow. Well, as things progress, we'll have more about this, I'm sure, and we'll hear more about it and who started it and why. We'll get the full story eventually, and we'll probably end up bringing it to you Tuesday with the Monday Night Raw report. Thanks for listening. We'll see you then.
You're listening.